Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Lanterne Rouge Cycling Podcast. A big Sunday of cycling. Gent-Wevelgem, both men and women's editions, as well as the final stage of Volta a Catalunya. Big shock upset there. That's a joke. There wasn't. Gent-Wevelgem with the two good races today. The men's race first, starting in Ypres, near the Menin Gate, which is under being renovated, I believe, from what I could see in the women's race. Finishing in Wevelgem, 252 km. It's basically monument length, this race, and it's the, I mean, Sanremo is now a sprinter's classic again, but this is the Belgian classic, apart from Brugge de Panne, that. Well, the most prestigious one, where the sprinters really have a good chance, because the first 150 kilometers are flat, although there's crosswinds in Demura. There was a cross tailwind today. Then they do the three repetitions of the Kemmelberg. The first two times are from the Belvedere side, which is slightly easier, but has the Monteberg before. And then the third time they do the Barneberg and then the Kemmelberg Ossuaire side, which crests about 35 kilometers from the finish. And these sort of climbs are 700 meters, 11% cobbled. The Ossuaire has some steep 18% sections in there as well. So it doesn't have the multitude of climbs a Kerner, RVV, or E3 has, and it has a flat finish, but it's still, and that makes it actually a really interesting race a lot of the time.
I agree, and it's kind of like Kerner in that way, where you've got this fight between the riders that do attack on those hills, or a group that goes on the moon, the echelon zone before the hills. And the sprinting peloton behind, the peloton with leftover sprinters that do have some teammates left. And it's a battle of, will the teammates of the sprinters be enough to take back the riders ahead? And I'll be honest, yes, we say this is one of the sprinting classics, perhaps, of the Flemish ones. But if you go through the last 10 years of this race, I feel like there's not much left of that. And if I go through it in my head, Wout van Aert won in an echelon segment. Paulini won in echelons. Van Avermaet probably wasn't a sprint, if I recall correctly. Then Binyam won by running away with Laporte and Van Gestel and Stuyven and so forth. Then Laporte and Van Aert both rode away together. And there's just so many editions where it's not actually a sprint that I feel like it's not really a sprinter classics anymore. The hills are decisive here if you're strong enough to pull it off, because it's often that the domestiques that are left over to bring the sprinters back just aren't good enough. And that brings us to the start list of this race, where Mathieu van der Poel and Philipsen are here in the same team, which makes for a really interesting dynamic. I was really curious how they were going to use Van der Poel and Philipsen, because you've got your rider to attack on the hills, but you've also got your man as a backup for a potential sprint. So I was very much looking forward to those two, but who else is here? Because Van Aert and Laporte ain't here, and I think Trotnik crashed out early on in the race. Like, who was here as like leader for Visma, for example? Visma Lisa Bike.
Koi in the sprint. Was the plan? Because no Laporte, because he's been sick, and Van Aert's doing Dwars Door of Vlaanderen. So they did Gent-Wevelgem when they won it 2 years in a row, swapping to do the Wednesday race, which Van der Poel did last year. And then the other, that means that the big contenders are Trek, because the other strongest team on Friday was Trek, with Sturve, Pedersen, and this is also a better race for Milan, because there's less hills in it, less steep repeated hills. So Trek came with a good team, and you, not even just them, like Kirsch was excellent on Friday, and there's Narváez, who was very good for Ineos. No Lazcano, so he wasn't here. There's Dalí, Benji. I mean, in theory, this should be Dalí's best classic almost. I don't see why this is harder than Omloop for him to win.
I think so too. Like Omloop, Kuurne, Gent-Wevelgem, and maybe a Dwars Door of London, even though that's become a bit harder looking at the start list, I would say. So those first three are definitely the ones I'm looking at, but he wasn't good at E3, and the team around him also wasn't good outside of Brent van Moer at E3, so I was more worried about, are they at the level to even perform in the first place at this race? And we'll see whether that was the case or not here, but you're right, that little track team at the start here, very nice, and it's also that balance of which riders they have. Jasper Stuyven, the attacker, Milan, the backup sprinter, Pedersen, the in-betweener, but spoilers, they use that a bit differently in this race, and I can't wait to jump into that. But before we go into the race, have we gone over everything?
I think we've done a pretty good preview of the start list. We have, probably should mention Binnie for clarity and Trentin because he's really good at Tudor. But yeah, that's it really. It's MVDP and MVDP could win solo based on what we saw in E3, and Phillipson could win a sprint based on what we've seen in Brugge de Panne and other races. So yeah, initially we saw a breakaway of Mercu, Jacobs, O'Brien, Uhl, Blum, Monk, Lebert, De Bont. This was the early days breakaway. No serious teams, but no like Alps and Trek or UAE represented or Visma. Not too many riders, and they got two. They even got 5 minutes. They really got a decent margin. There was no coverage. I don't know who was chasing. I assume Alpecin. I assume Trek. That's why they signed Tim. He's not on the start list. That's why they signed Darnola. So it was pretty well under control, even though you'd think, 5 minutes with those hills, but nah. Because it was about to kick off. But before it kicked off, I want to give a mention to the people that commented on the last podcast on YouTube, because despite my pleas, I said, pick a joint training plan for me. And I was like, with a focus on stamina. And everybody said, guess what the most voted one was, Benji?
I saw two very prominent ones. One was VO2 Max, the one I was joking about. And the other one was Fabio Jakobsen's sprint plan. What were those the most voted ones, or
Fabio Jakobsen's sprint plan? So, I've brought it upon myself, and so I'll read out in the Fabio Jakobsen sprint plan. You do a unique sprint workout each week. It's a 6 week plan, and when I look at the training plan, it's still 13 hours a week, and I don't think it's too bad. Everyone thought they were trolling me, but actually, it's just a focus on sprints. Everyone thought it's like a track plan. So like, joke's on you, it's still a pretty normal plan because sprinters actually fit individuals. So I'm actually not that unhappy about it. Like the first workout's 2 hours with 8 minutes of threshold intervals, which is like quite intense, obviously. But then others like 2 hour endurance rides for the next three rides. So what I would say to everybody is the joke's on you. You thought you were trolling me. I'm happy with the Fabio Jakobsen joint cycling sprint plan, and that's what I'll be doing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, when it comes to my goals, like Col d'Ardino, I want to do a better time than last year. So
yeah, don't do the sprint plan.
I'm not going to do the sprint plan. I think I'm going to go for one of the endurance plans. So I'm not even going to allow the comments to have a take on these. I'll just go to the list and select the one I like. There's ones that fit on longer climbs, stuff like that. So that's going to be the one I'll be focusing on for next month and a week. When are we seeing each other?
However long's till the Giro? Probably about 6 weeks, I'd say. About 6 weeks.
Enough.
Yeah, so that's what I'll be doing. Fabio Jakobsen's sprint plan, except my chain stays on when I'm sprinting. That's the only difference. I mean, I wonder, I have to look. I don't know how in-depth the join plan is on that, but I wonder if in the join plan, it tells you how to keep your chain on the last 1K.
Training 5 is getting the chain off your bike during the sprint.
I don't want to do that. I say crash, and I've had enough crashes this year. I should be in my join, in my notes. In every workout, I should auto-populate. That could be a feature they add, auto-populate. Just don't crash today, buddy. Anyway, you go check out joint cycling. There's plenty of plans for everybody. We'll be doing that plan. We saw some crashes before coverage started in Gent-Wevelgem. Crash by Narváez, Swift and Stewart. Narváez out of the race. And then another crash by a Visma rider. Tratnik crashes out of the race. I think he had a concussion check. What I heard on comms was that it was negative, but it quite a hard crash at the back of the peloton. So Visma had a shocker really last week with who's crashed? Van Aert, Laporte sick. Jorgensen crashed after the race. Tratnik crashed today. Van Baal crashed and had three punctures. Hagen has crashed, broke his nose. Yeah. I mean, Jesus. Benoit crashed.
You weren't even done. That's crazy.
It's been a shocker, yeah.
And it's they build on their numerical advantage to try and beat Van der Poel in RVV and so forth, but there's not much left of this numerical advantage after the infirmary has gone through them in the last 2 weeks. So that's going to be something to look at for RVV, also to see whether the strength of their team in block is good at Dwarsdorf-Landen, where they do have a strong team. depending on whether there's been adaptions towards that start list from those crashes. But crashes aside, shit was about to hit the fan. Because we hinted at it in the last podcast that there might be wind in the moon, and then 2 days ago I checked the ticker again, and there was going to be wind in the moon, because 35k an hour hit wind, and they basically go from Vurne down towards the Ypres area, roughly, and that means it was cross tailwind in like a very open area in a, yeah, the moon, the marches basically is the name for it, so it was going to be chaos, and it was instantly the case, and I swear, it's super annoying that there's no coverage of this, number one. Like, it happens so much that the Moeren opens up that one day I hope we do get the coverage from Gent Wevelgem from the Moeren. But that aside, following the tickers and trying to figure out who was in the echelons or not, it was a lot to try and follow. And I swear there was about 29 riders in the first echelon. And the teams that were missing were Lotto was missing, Bahrain was missing, UNOX was missing, Israel was missing, and Sport Vlaanderen. Five teams missing. And then you're looking at the front group.
Mostly missing.
Yes, but Merlier's in the front group.
Yeah.
And that makes an interesting dynamic, because then Quickstep starts pacing behind while having Merlier at the front, which was quite interesting to see, but that's because they want more riders at the front, because they can't 100% trust on Merlier to be the man to deliver this home. And then you look at the other teams out there. Alpecin's there with Vanderpool, Philipsen, and one extra rider. Not sure who the third rider was from Alpecin. Four riders from the likes of Little Trek, including Pedersen was there. Stuyven was there. Was Milan in first echelon?
Yeah. He was there.
Just next to that, Olaf Koy was in there. So you've got the most important riders of a lot of teams have made it into the echelon. And then you're wondering, how can the others have missed it? Because you know echelons are going to happen, right? Like, everybody yesterday in the evening heard from their team, or this morning in the bus, it's going to be echelons. Make sure you're at the front right there. Is it because there's so many people fighting for it? Or is it because they didn't have the legs to be in it in the first place?
I mean, maybe you're out of position and someone drops the wheel in front of you, like with Nils Pollitt. Like, Nils Pollitt's got legs this season. There's no doubt about that. So clearly he was out of position, or I don't know, maybe he got bumped into a ditch. Maybe you just get pushed out at the wrong time. But there's also riders that don't have the legs, because it's clear that with so many favorites making it, it clearly wasn't a surprise. Everyone knew this was going to happen. 35 kilometers an hour cross tailwind in Demura, it will split 100% of the time. And because actually the perverse thing then is, because all the favorites make it, both attackers and sprinters, no team really thought to press on the advantage. No team thought, why just pace full gas? There's Phillips and Coy here. Or why pace full gas if you're a sprinter's team? There's MVDP Sturver here. So it went along. I think Pedersen and Trek tried to sort of push it along or split it again, but it wasn't quite the same. And actually, Group 2 starts coming back quite a lot after being on a pretty big gap before.
Yeah, it was. At a certain point, the ticker said 2:30, but I don't believe that was through at any point. It was a minute max, I reckon, and it went down gradually from that point. We're talking 150k from the finish line, the start of the Moor, and that's where the echelons happen. Then there's 50k's of a gradual fight between echelon 1 and echelon 2, and the breakaway being ahead of that, being 6 riders that eventually get caught by echelon 1. And the gap between echelon 1 and 2 started deteriorating in, I would say, the second half towards the hill zone, the last 30 kilometers before the hill zone. So we're looking at the Scherpenberg coming up in 30k. Gradually, the group gets closer and closer, and it's on that Scherpenberg and Barnenberg, the first two climbs of the day, that it starts closing together, but it shows that there's been damage. People in the second group have been suffering trying to get this back. People in group one have been suffering in the echelons as well. And I didn't feel like there was a complete merger of two groups. It felt more like it was two groups catching up together right at the moment when there's a hill and some riders from the second group make it into the first group, because then it splits again and then there's a new split of exactly the same sizes after the Barneberg.
Yeah, I couldn't really figure out what was going on. All I could really... it's hazy for me. I'm a bit crook as well, so bear with me. But Trek were the most active team and the strongest team today. Like, that's just by far. And going into Belvedere 1... they were leading it out, which is probably the smart thing to do because you can isolate Van der Poel, and then it's like, can Van der Poel go clear with 80Ks to go and go solo against you? No, he couldn't even do that. He couldn't even, no one can do it. He couldn't do it on Tyenberg in E3. And now with a lot more flat here after the first Kemmelberg, it's unlikely. So you can get rid of all his teammates, put Philipsen behind, and maybe have numbers. So Trek, which is exactly what Van Hooydonk did last year. So Trek literally have, in a lot in E3 and today, they've replaced Visma in dominating the race. And they use Milan in that role. He attacks Sturve and Pedersen on the wheel of Van der Poel, Pithy there, Tim van Dijk and Tiller, the other two that make it across with Van der Poel. And you suddenly have a group. And also the gap is really big. Like it's not like there's sometimes on the first Kemmelberg, there's like, okay, there's a split, but it's like 3 seconds. And by the end of the descent, when the fixed cameras finished, it's all back together. It was like a big gap.
Yeah. Just to clarify, this is first Kemmelberg, the Belvedere side. And you're right. Lil Trek was the one going into that climb. Mathieu van der Poel made that attack. And then that group forms with those riders of Trek in there, with the riders you mentioned, which is Piffy, Tiller, Van Dijk, Van der Poel, Pedersen, Stuyven, and Milan. And you're also very right on the fact that then they started playing with Little Trek. Then they know they've got the numbers, three riders, but it's also curious to me the following that happened. So, scenario after Belvedere. Milan makes that move, attacks from that group of seven riders, and forces Van der Poel, Van Dijk, Piffy, and Tiller to pay spa after Milan with Pedersen and Stuyven in their wheel. The peloton is 20 seconds behind that six-man group. I don't believe that Van der Poel would ride as offensively in this race at that moment if Philipsen wasn't in the peloton behind. As in, when the gap is 20 seconds, pacing as hard as he did with Pedersen and Stuyven in the wheel, that didn't sound like tactically the best decision.
Yeah, but why don't you just go back and have, let's see who's your man's got here.
Vermeers?
Why don't you just go back and have Vermeers and Søren Kral pace then?
Exactly.
So I think this was tactically Van der Poel's worst race and I can remember for a long time.
And I think the reason for it is that he knew Philipsen was behind and he knew he could play around a little. That's the excuse I'm giving him here.
If Philipsen's behind, Milan, I like Milan, don't get me wrong. Wanted to sign him. I think he's a great rider. But 80Ks solo, and you could see the way he was bobbing, and you see the way he blew up in Omloop the last 2 years. It's not something to ruin your race over. It's not Dylan Van Baarle who you're like, actually, he could do this all day. He's a sprinter in the end. He's a classic sprinter. And I was really surprised to see Van der Poel basically pull full gas behind Milan on the flat, because between the two Kemmelbergs, you have, yes, there's the Ploegstreets between the sort of muddy... Hey,
don't you dare shit on our Ploegstreets, man.
No. I'm saying they're not uphill. Like, there's still a big draft benefit. Between the two, it's like 30Ks of flat. And I was thinking, 20 seconds, doesn't Van der Poel just... Because the other guys weren't really working. Pithy eventually gave us a few turns. Van Dijk gave him two turns. Pedersen served no turns. Normally, he would just go back to the peloton. And then you have the peloton hold Milan at 25 seconds and Trek are kind of burning a guy in front. Instead, Trek got exactly what they wanted. The race favorite, pulling full gas on the flat with Pedersen and Sturven, the two strongest Trek riders in his wheel. And then the peloton behind was kind of Quickstep. They really weren't making much headway because Visma weren't chasing, Groupama weren't chasing with Kuhn, and Intermarché, I'll have a few words about them later, they're a disgrace today. So it was just kind of Quickstep with Lampard chasing or Tudor a little bit. So very strange, actually, but Trek were up to the Ploegstraat, Benji, looking rosy for Trek, but then it changed a little bit there.
Exactly, because we hit those Ploegstraats. Yes, the gaps are starting to gradually increase a little bit, because while Trek is also present with Milan at the front, with Pedersen Stuyven in that second group, in the peloton, you've got Kirsch and three other riders basically not blocking the road, but trying to upset the chase, is how I would classified. Being in second wheel, and when the first rider goes to the front, there's a track rider at the front suddenly that doesn't want to pace. So stuff like that. And you saw that actively helping the groups in front. So that's also happening while all of this is happening. We head into the hill, 63 Plug Street. This is the first time I realized that these Plug Streets actually have a name. I think Hill 63 is a reference towards a hill that was very prominent in the World War back in the day. But Van der Poel attacks on a hill, on that Plug Street, not a hill, on the Plug Street. He drops Van Dijk. Tiller gets dropped. Stuyven gets dropped because of mechanical, because he has a back wheel puncture. And the problem is also that if you have a back wheel puncture on the gravel sector, your dude with a wheel is at the end of the bloody gravel sector. So you need to ride till the end, then you're going to go slower through the corners, and Van der Poel is literally attacking the group at that point. So who's left over? Pedersen's left over. Piffy's left over in the wheel of Van der Poel. And they're gradually getting closer to Milan at this point. So 66K to go. We're off to the Plug Street. Stuyven is now in Narnia behind the Peloton group, but he's going to come back to the Peloton group eventually. And at the front of the race, we've got Milan with behind him three riders, 15 seconds behind him, Van der Poel, Pedersen, Piffy. And then a minute behind Milan at the front is the Peloton. And there are teams there present to pace, but these Plug Streets also prevent an organized chase, right?
Yeah, prevent. All people were like, oh, we're still kind of represented up front. Like Visma weren't chasing full gas for Coy at that point because Van Dijk was sort of in the middle. And the other teams like Quickstep, that they're also trying to keep Domestiques because everyone's thinking about the chase after the final Kemmelberg. But for Trek with Stuyven's puncture, I thought, well, that's really bad because now Milan is eventually going to get reeled in. And then if MVDP has the shape of E3, he basically can make it mano a mano with Pedersen.
Yep.
Maybe drop him second Camel, go with him, and then maybe then drop him, have another chance to drop him last Camel. But Milan gets caught. Pedersen immediately attacks. Van der Poel closes. Actually, Pithy tried to jump first. And it would have been interesting to see, actually, if Pithy had gone with say, Milan initially, what would have happened with Pedersen. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder if Stuyven, because if Stuyven's still here, after the Pedersen anticipation, Stuyven will go, and Van der Poel will not close that move. No chance. He will close it. He closed Pedersen. And I wonder if Stuyven was there, if the race actually does play out in Trek's favor, if it was actually the sequence of events afterwards. But anyway, because Pedersen gets closed down, they actually will just start rolling together. Pithy's realized Milan's court looks a bit fucked. Okay, if I work with these guys, I can get third. At worst, this is a big race. And he's got a good sprint, who knows? So he's got to pull at least a little bit if he's not too fucked. Pedersen's really feeling confident, but starts rolling through. I'm not too confident at this point. And Van der Poel, again, I'm curious. I thought he could have relaxed a little bit, and he keeps pulling really, really hard. I was surprised.
And then Pedersen goes to the front with a little bit of a move. It wasn't necessarily a full-on attack, but like a bit of an acceleration.
Yeah, on the Monteberg, the Barneberg.
This makes Milan struggle and basically drop off the back. So Pedersen dropped his teammate, even though Milan probably wasn't going to be worth much more after that, even though after he drops, he returns and he attacks the bloody group, which this is just before the second Kelmerberg. And even though that attack happens, you know that whenever Van der Poel does something on the next Kelmerberg, which is inevitable, you will see Milan get caught on that Kelmerberg. And we see that Belvedere second time, but Milan gets caught so close that it's actually Pedersen that makes the move here. And I'll be honest, much of Van der Poel, he looked like suspect. He was struggling.
He looked suspect, didn't he?
Yeah. He looked like he was folded double into his frame, is how I would describe it.
Well, you could tell because when he first went, Pithy started overlapping his front wheel to his back wheel. I was like, that's not. I mean, normally I like Pithy, but normally that doesn't happen. And so, yeah, he just didn't look like he had that snap. Pedersen absolutely whacks it. He even gets gapped a little bit, Van der Poel, but just stays in the wheel. And so the trio go clear. Milan's full dropped at this point. They also, when this happens, puts more time into the peloton. They go clear. Pithy, Pedersen, Van der Poel. We have one Kemmelberg left. No more Pflugstrasse. The next Kemmel comes quicker, though. 17 Ks afterwards with the Scherpenberg and the Barneberg in between. So actually much less flat here. The three basically roll turns. Pithy skips occasionally. Pedersen starts. Everyone's tightening their boots. But it looks like either MVDP had a weak moment, or MVDP's really not feeling good, or MVDP's a genius because Pedersen starts pulling. He's full of confidence now. Yeah. He just starts pulling like the hardest of anyone in the group, fully backing himself before the last Gemmelberg. And this is the hardest one, the steepest one, I'll swear. They get to it. By the way, back to the peloton. Visma start chasing full. Quickstep really just were chasing full.
I feel like Benoit waited a long time.
Before the Camels, two things. Scherpenberg, everyone's chasing full.
Okay.
They got one rider on Van Dijk or Affini, and then Quickstep had two. Then all of a sudden, Visma disappear off the front.
Yeah.
Quickstep stopped chasing. The gap was not that outrageous, right? 25, 30 seconds, maybe less.
Yeah, exactly.
Antomarché have like five riders. They got this rider called Binyam Girmay on the team. He's won this race before. Don't pull.
And they're like,
not even
passive
that.
Passive riding.
Not even that. Antomarché, instead of pulling, and Visma too should have put a rider the whole way to the last Kemmelberg. Antomarché attack or anticipate with moves sitting on. So Turner, Ineos, they don't have a sprinter. They got to anticipate and go. It makes total sense with Turner, right? Or Sheffield. Yep. I can't criticize that. And Hugo Page goes with him. I'm like, what the fuck are they doing? Control the gap before the Kemmelberg to give Binny a chance in the sprint. No offense to Hugo Page, but he is not bridging a Jasper attack with Ben Turner to Mads Pedersen and Mathieu Van Der Poel. And then another move goes, I can't remember who with, and another Antomarché rider jumps with him. I'm like, what are you doing? I understand if you want to do the old school points tactic and sprint with five guys at the end, I don't like it. Okay, but do that. But now you're anticipating with them for Chaspatats instead of pulling. It makes no sense.
And being super passive in this race, at this phase in the race, but even earlier when they weren't helping the pace at all, even though they have someone behind and no one at the front. Like, if you're not at the front of the race, you can't win the race. So it was as if they rode the entire race
for third.
For a top five position.
Yeah.
Third wasn't even available earlier. So for a top five position.
Pithy's up the road still.
I don't get what Antomarché was doing here.
Because it's the last climb. Like Van der Poel's not going to beat Binny in a big bunch sprint. If you catch him, you're looking good.
And in addition to that, you've also got the fact that it's not just that they're not helping, they're self-sabotaging their own chances. But anyway, Antomarché, enough about them. We spoke about... Go ahead.
Well, yeah. Visma, Quickstep, the other guys with the sprint, they lose the chance to win this race here or even get a better result here because the gap goes from 25 to 45 seconds for free to the Pedersen of Van der Poel group. And then, Pedersen goes on elsewhere, absolutely smashes it. Pithy is full dropped, like on Mont Saint-Laurent when Van Aert dropped him in Kerner. Yeah. And the same thing happened to him today, unfortunately.
Fucking devastating.
Yeah, man. I know, really unfortunate.
Then you have a really strong race, but because that last portion of the race, you get dropped by the people up front.
Yeah.
You're not going to have that result in the end. You're basically not going to end up with a proper result because of that, because you blew your race by being... trying to be with the best, which I would never blame the rider for, but the results won't show how good he was today.
I know. Same thing happened, Kern. A real shame. Pithy was even maybe stronger today, to be honest. He was really, really, really good. And then Pedersen basically had MVDP almost on a gap on us. I think he had him on a gap, actually, at points on the last climb. So it was clear he was the strongest. They go clear. They work. Pedersen pulls also afterwards. In the 10-15 minutes after the last Kemmelberg, it looked to me like Pedersen was pulling 75% of the time.
Yeah.
As well. And they kill Pithy. They just put him out the back and don't let him come back. Yeah, I think there was a headwind as well.
Yep.
And so he basically sits up for the group three, which is the Antomarché Turner group, I think. But the Peloton, what's also clear is that the Peloton for the Antomarché rider, they should have really clocked immediately. Like the Peloton's gonna catch those guys. The Peloton was at 1:30, I think.
In addition to that, you've also got the effect of those Kemmelbergs make it so that the chase in the peloton also get disrupted every time those hills happen because the group gets split into pieces. So, for example, after Ossuaire, Van Lerberghe and Merlier were in a second peloton for a bit, which caused Asgreen and Lampard to look behind them while they were at the front. Basically, they were stopping the tempo, waiting for them to come back to then start pacing, which means that the gap goes from a minute to a minute 30 before they actually start their chase, which if it's a minute 30 and we're looking at 30, what is it, 35-ish kilometers, 37-ish kilometers after the last kilometer towards the finish line, sorry, 34 kilometers. Sorry, but a minute 30 to Van der Poel and Mes Pérez, and knowing that all the domestiques in that peloton are absolutely fucked, sorry, I don't see it happening. But it would depend on whether Van der Poel keeps riding with Pedersen or not. Because there's always the chance that Van der Poel at this point says, or a bit later in the race with like 10, 15 kilometers to go, I'm going to sit in your wheel now because I've got Philipsen behind. Which, it's a valid excuse because Philipsen is on paper the faster sprinter in the group behind. Merlier is also a pretty fast guy. But on paper, Philipsen has a chance there. And I don't know, seeing Van der Poel, how much he struggled on the kilometers, I think they probably, do you reckon they at least considered doing that?
No, because he pulls full. He almost starts pulling more with Pedersen closer to the finish. Like, it was clear that Pedersen was strong on the Kelberg. It reminded me of Asgreen, like when Asgreen on the Paderberg, he was like, in 21, he was putting it into Van der Poel. And it reminded me of that a little bit. And so Pedersen normally is a better sprinter than Van der Poel anyway, but then at San Remo, his sprint was kind of shit.
I'd say it depends on the type of sprint we have, because we've had this discussion before already. We had the Asgreen versus Van der Poel sprint and the Wout van Aert versus Van der Poel sprints at the Tour of Flanders. Asgreen versus Van der Poel, you look at a rider that is Kasper Asgreen, which prefers a sprint that is a bit higher speed with a longer sprint, so like 300 meters, 350 meters, something like that. Mathieu van der Poel is the opposite on paper. He's the kind of rider that wants a shorter sprint at a slower starting speed, because that way he can benefit from acceleration in that sprint. And that's the comparison I saw in this sprint coming up. Because if those two riders were going to make it to the finish line, which started to look like it, to be honest, Van der Poel, Mes Pedersen, and Van der Poel wants a slow start to the sprint and a shorter sprint so that he can use that acceleration, while Mes Pedersen wants that longer sprint, but also a higher starting speed so that acceleration of Van der Poel doesn't hit him as hard. But the problem there is, Luke, our producer, rightly pointed out, then Pedersen will have to be strong enough that he can do a lead out to speed himself up into the sprint. Because Van der Poel, if Van der Poel starts his sprint at the front, he's going to try and lower the tempo, right?
Yeah, like
Pedersen will need to up the tempo.
Like what he did to Van Aert, they were almost at a standstill.
Yep.
And then it was like a cyclocross start sprint in the 2020 Tour of Flanders. But yeah, it's the group starts coming back quickly, probably because they eased up a little bit. You've got Quickstep fully pacing, Benoit and Van Dijk brother. Antemarché still, by the way, four riders in the group. Don't put a rider.
Yeah.
And just checking the results, the other riders finished, yeah, like Mikkels finished 39th, so like, and Rex 16th. So if Binny improves a couple of spots, it's more than a 30-point delta. Anyway, they're not coming back. The gap was too big. But what it does show, to my earlier points, is that a gap of 50 seconds or 40 seconds was closable. Because there were enough teams, but the problem was before the last Camelberg, they lost it there. And that's why I was thinking, Benji, to your point, the question you asked earlier, if they're going to play the Philipsen card, like, couldn't they, I get Van der Poel pulling to like 5Ks to go, 3Ks to go. He was pulling in the last 2Ks.
Yep.
And he was stretching his back and he also looked. Yeah, I just think he pulled way too long. Whether it makes a difference in the end, I don't know. I think maybe it does. I think if you stop pulling a kilometer earlier, ultimately the guy on the front is going to lower his speed.
And in addition to that, you got to keep in mind that Philipsen wasn't alone in the second peloton group. In the peloton behind.
Yeah,
I swear there were at least three Alpecin riders next to him. Søren Krogh, Vermeersch, and maybe a Ricard or something. I'm not sure who the third rider was. But that's a lead out. So you have a valid backup there. So I indeed would have... Honestly, pure tactically, I would have considered taking the Philipsen card, but that's a gamble too.
No, I wouldn't have done that because his sprint in sort of classic races hasn't looked as dominant to me this year, and you never know at the end of a long classic. I wouldn't have full played it, but I would have used it as an excuse to go in the wheel much earlier, much earlier.
And then that's what I mean, eh?
Yeah.
If you're Van der Poel, you play the Philipsen card as in like, I've got Philipsen behind, I'll stop with 2K to go, pacing to 3K, 4K, I don't even care. Yeah. Just not in the last 2K, because that was a bit late.
Because Pedersen does it perfect, basically. Van der Poel eventually stops, maybe 1,200 meters to go. Pedersen doesn't think twice. He's like, I got to get from here to 300 meters.
Yeah.
And he basically just keeps the speed exactly the same, or like, okay, maybe knocks a bit off. He does not let the speed drop. He just keeps on it. And he basically, and you saw him in Provence. When he's on a good day, Pedersen can basically ride at his threshold all day and then still do his best sprint, it seems like, from 300 meters. So that's exactly
Except
what happens.
MSR.
Except, yeah, but that's not threshold all day. It's like more explosive. I think after a hard race when he's on form, and that was clearly the case today because he gets to 300 meters, didn't think twice, fully confident, opens it up. With Van der Poel on the wheel, and it never looked like Van der Poel was coming over the top of him. Van der Poel comes out of the draft, maybe 100 meters, 150 meters to go. He's not making up ground quick enough, and he pulls out like when Asgreen won, and Pedersen wins the strongman sprint, wins the race. Perfect tactics from Little Trek today, and perfect execution, even with bad luck of Sturve in the Ploegstraat, beating Van der Poel in the head-to-head sprint. Jordi Meus third. Philipsen fourth, so he didn't win the bunch sprint behind, but maybe Alpecin didn't do a full lead out because they weren't trying to catch Matthew Van der Poel. Milan recovers to come fifth after actually leading out the sprint. Koy sixth, Binnie seventh, Merlier eighth, Groenewegen ninth, and Trentin tenth. So decent sized group, about 40 deep. Jordi Meus, not on my bingo card to podium and favor him, but I thought it was Danny Van Poppel. I was like, oh, that's a nice result for Van Poppel.
Then Van der Poel, after the race ended, interview with him, he said, I suffered a lot today. I nearly dropped on the second Camelberg, so not even the third one. He nearly dropped on the second one, he says. The strongest rider won today. And then the interviewer rightfully asks, well, shouldn't your team have used like the Philipsen card behind? And Van der Poel's response was, I'll roughly quote him because this is purely of memory, that he said, well, first of all, Philipsen didn't win the sprint behind. I'm not sure that point really hits because otherwise he would have had Van der Poel as a lead out. So that would have changed something when it comes to lead out. But his other point was, I'm in the world championship jersey. I'm in that position. I feel like as a world champion, I should pace here. And at a certain point, tactically, you need to make a decision. And we made a decision. And yeah, we got second today, which... fair point, to be honest. Like,
it's not a guarantee Pedersen beats him in the sprint.
Yeah, it's not a full guarantee. Like, I had it at about 65% Pedersen, 35% Van der Poel.
Yeah, I think Pedersen was so confident to the point where I was like, wow, he either is crazy overextending or he just knows he's way stronger. And we clearly had the answer at the end of the race today. It's his second-hand Vavilov 2. He won the COVID edition in 2020 when he anticipated in the final ahead of Van Aert and Van der Poel, who were closing each other, and he won in a small group sprint ahead of Seneschal there, I think. So he's got quite a nice palmarès, Mads Pedersen. Never spoken about in the same breath as sort of Van Aert or Van der Poel, but he's a world champion, stage of the Tour de France, stage of Tuchan Vavilov, Kurna. And Trek looked very, very good today. And actually, I think Trek and Jumbo or Visma, rather, they cannibalize each other between Tyenberg and Paterberg on E3. Yeah. And then with Visma basically being irrelevant in today's race, Trek could just like focus fully on Van der Poel, and their tactics were really good. And I wonder, like, sure, and this is Geen Veland, let's not overreact, right? This is a very, very different race to Tour of Flanders.
The immediate reaction in Belgium was, oh, we're going into RVV with three favorites now.
No.
I'm going with one.
One favorite.
We're talking about Vanderpool, right? We don't have two different favorites, right?
Lawrence Pitney! Get him in. They're probably not even sending him. Vanderpool. It gives a very different race. It's hills back to back to back to back to back. And this is three big efforts on the Kemmelberg. And the sprinters, the really like classic sprinters, are good on the Kemmelberg. Van Aert dropped Pedersen here last year. So let's not overreact too much, but certainly Little Trek have taken a big step. That they were second in E3, first today. They are looking really, really good. And they've been stronger than Visma in the last two classics. Not on opening weekend, but the last two classics, E3 and today, they've been stronger. Today was expected, but E3 was a bit of a surprise. So that's congrats to them. Any last thoughts on this race, Benji? Any other standouts? Things that surprised you? Takeaways for the Tour of Flanders?
Well, I'm trying to wrap my head around how Little Trek can use today and figure out how they can apply that at the Tour of Flanders, because no offense to Milan, but in the end, Milan's less relevant. He's irrelevant in the Tour of Flanders.
Yeah. You got Schoens, though. You got Schoens. He then...
Fully agree.
But don't domesticate Schoens.
Domesticate?
Domestique.
He's a pet now.
Well, half the time he's stronger than Pedersen. They make him do a lead out into Paderborn for Pedersen on the E3.
Yeah, but Kirsch beat Pedersen that day as well. But I also think that Kirsch should beat him. Right. Even though that Kirsch crash, by the way, we didn't comment on it.
Yeah,
a lot of people everybody was talking about some magical thing that made him crash. But descent of the Kemmelberg, pedaled in the corner.
I didn't crash on that descent when I did it last week.
Yeah, but you crashed in like 17 other descents in the last 2 months.
They should basically do exactly what they did today and anticipate and try and work over Vanderpool and also refuse to help him. Yep. This was the first time I can remember a long time, apart from Pithy, a few round turns where people were like, no, Matthew Vanderpool. Because sometimes Vanderpool has come into these the big races.
Yeah.
And he's been like in Dwarsdorf, for example, last year or the year before. You're like, how are people helping him so much?
Was that the Kampenaerts descent version?
Yeah, and like people helping him so much. And then he just kills you. And then he gets the big race day and he's like, actually, I'm a level above everybody.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, whereas E3, he was so good that today people are like, we're not helping you before the camel works. We're just not until Pedersen nearly dropped him.
My friend, there's now three favorites for RVV. Obviously, he's going to say Alpecin ain't riding.
He
today,
will, though. They will. So like, don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. Vanderpool, big race rider. RVV, he will be good.
No shit.
Yeah. Okay, on to the women's race, which is actually one of the longest races in the women's calendar as well, just like the men's race. 170 kilometers. They do two reps of the Kemmelberg. They do the Belvedere side and then the Osswehr side. They don't do the Plugstraats. They do De Mora in the first 50Ks. But yeah, after 100Ks, they do the same final. They do exactly the same final as the men's race with hills. And then the last Kemmelberg Osswehr is 35Ks from the finish. They still had about a cross tailwind, I think. Maybe even genuine tailwind into Vevelgem. In the finish, we had Lotte Kopecky, Marlon Reusser, Majerus, Femke Marcus, Vanderbroek Black, and Vibas for SD Works. So obviously the big favourites of the race. Dygert's back in Europe. This is her second race. She was sixth in Brugge de Panne in a sprint. And she's back in Europe racing this year after coming back on Wednesday. Well, she's been training here for a bit, but racing Wednesday, Grace Brown. But Trek also the second strongest team, just like in the men's race. Balsamo, Hansen, Longaborghini, Van Anroy, Van Dijk as well. And then there's Charlotte Kuhl and Pfeiffer Georgie as the sort of attacker sprint option for DSM Firmenich Post-NL. No Marianne Vos, despite really good shape on opening weekend. So they were the main favorites, if I've not missed anyone, Benji.
You're right. And I was looking forward to try to figure out what the differences were in the level of the field compared to Omloop and Sothof about a month ago. Because it's been some time, we're closer towards the holy week of RVV. And in this race, you've got basically the last portion of the men's hill zone, is how I see the parkour. But we went through the Murren with this peloton, and I didn't see any reports of anything happening. I was kind of surprised, because I swear the wind didn't go down since this morning, but what? Maybe the reports were wrong, but I didn't see any action in the Murren.
No, it seemed to be all like pretty much close together, because with like 65, 67Ks to go, there were attacks on the first hills. So maybe SD were, I mean, you got to remember as well, the teams here, they have one less rider. A lot of the teams have, some of the teams have five riders rather than the seven riders. And the big teams are also all trying to protect leaders. Not that that means, you know, if you're SD Works, if you're Royce, I'll still put it in the gutter, but maybe like Royce is not the best in crosswinds. Or the hectic is my read on it too. But yeah, it seemed not as chaotic as the men's race in that phase, yeah. Benji.
Like, there was like a small split, I think, with about 120Ks to go, but it was gone in like a few kilometers. So I was like, okay, I was hoping this would be an echelon zone into the hill zone. But you're right. It was the hill zones that was going to be the action here today. And I kind of was expecting the kind of vibe we got on every single hill in the classic so far this season, where SD work smash, Kopecky attack. That's what I was expecting, and that's exactly what started it off, because we've got that Barneberg-Scherpenberg combo that starts it off with about 60K to go. Just before that, Elisa Longoborghini and Grace Brown crashed, but they got back up the bike. They were back in the race, so they were competitive from that point. No real harm done there. And the first person attacking, I think it was on the Barneberg, was Lotte Kopecky. Yep. And there was a small split for a little bit. Nothing too crazy. Like 5-6 riders is my pure guess that was formed because of that Kopecky move. Reusser was in a small group with Puck Pieterse behind. Reusser forced Puck to close that. Then the SM in the larger group closed everything. So that was a fast hit by Lotte Kopecky. And this is before we even hit that first Kemmelberg Belvedere side. And that's where the big kickoff happened. Once again, we hit that Kemmelberg Belvedere, and the thing with the Belvedere side as well is, Belvedere side basically starts with cobble to the top. The Ossuaire side, which is the last one, has an uphill asphalt section, and then the cobble start. What became clear on this race is that on any Kemmelberg, Kopecky doesn't attack until the cobble start. She waits until the first cobble hits, and then she starts smashing it. That's exactly the same that happened on the Belvedere side. So with 53 kilometers to go, Kopecky starts pushing the second the cobbles hit, and it starts splitting the group. And it was like the gradual splitting as we go towards the top, and good riders that I was like, okay, this rider is on point. Puck Pieterse, really good at this point. Persico, five for Georgie. No real track rider in the first five. And most importantly, Lorena Wibbes was so much better, so much more versatile than an Omloop at the start of the year. She's back on point. She was back in the level that I expected her to be in classics, and she flew up the hill the same way that Kopecky did. And I was like, well, this race is over.
Yeah, exactly. Because this is the first Kemmelberg, and she's looking so good there. And it goes to show, it's a great climb for the sprinters. But yeah, they get Longoborghini and Balsamo catch back up, and it's like with the men's race, with two of the best sprinters here, because Balsamo's in good shape, Wibbes and Balsamo, yep. They both have one domestique, Kopecky and Longoborghini, one teammate, and then Georgie's got Charlotte Kohl behind. There's no real team wants to sacrifice, no real advantage yet to just press on the front and just go full gas. So they get chased down about 12Ks. Madras comes back for SD Works and starts pushing. Letizia Borghese, she shows off the EF POC helmet they've been wearing in the road races, that aero helmet, and she tries to anticipate, I think, before the Barneberg, which is before the last Ossuaire, the last Kemmelberg, the hardest one. And I think it was, the Canyon rider was Alice Towers. It was Alice Towers. And so I mentioned Canyon because I was like, where's Diggett? Yep. Like, should not Daigat be good at this?
She was in the group. On the first Kalmar, she was behind a little bit of a split, so she wasn't necessarily at the front there. Can we talk about the fact that UCI has a sock rule, but is there a bibs length rule? Because I swear every time I see Daigat, her bibs become shorter.
Is it because of aero? Sock rule. She got the triathlete socks.
Really?
No, I don't think they're triathletes. But yeah, you can pick her apart because she got the bright pink bike and the pink shoes, which actually I find helpful because I like Van Aert's helmet.
I agree.
When Van Der Poel was in the Dutch jersey, yeah, it's really helpful because like, oh, there's the superstar. but in terms of, I still think she is a superstar in terms of talent. But yeah. I was like, what's going on? Like, are you really going to wait for a bunch sprint? And her positioning is, you know, awful going to the climb. But anyway, Towers goes clear. Capecchi goes. Same really as the first one, Benji. Vibas is right there, almost looking like she could attack her. Like, yeah. Vibas looked like she was doing it easy on the last Kemmelberg.
Oh, ho, 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 ho.
And he was just kind of scary. ELB pops. And Georgie goes with the two of them, which is probably good for, like, if Georgie's not there, Capecchi and Vibas full gas relay.
Yeah.
Like Laporte and Van Aert. But because Georgie's there, and she's not going to pull with these two, obviously, they don't really... I mean, maybe they should have just fully committed anyway because Vibas is going to win that sprint regardless. But it's what is curious to me here is group comes back.
Which group?
Pieterse, Svinkels, Van Aanrooy, Longoborghini, Roycer. So you got world champ, your Swiss champ, Roycer, and you got Vibas, and Balsamo's not there, and two of Balsamo's best domestiques are in the group, so they can't chase you.
Yep.
They're not in the group behind. And SD works. Don't just put Roycer on the front, and you just say, okay, 10 minutes, pull as hard as you can, and destroy the motivation. Like, as soon as you just, as soon as the Trek domestique pulls off on the group behind, everyone's going to not pull.
Yeah,
but she didn't.
Exactly, and to me, like, tactically, I would never make this gamble. As in, SD Works basically chooses, okay, we're not gonna pull this 8-rider group with 3 of our riders in it. We're not gonna pull that group towards the line. We're not gonna have Roycer do that tempo. We're gonna choose to have Vibas sprint against Balsamo, Consoni, Cole, by letting the peloton come back instead of sprinting against non-sprinters.
Yeah, in addition to that,
the other disadvantage is that you then need to control the peloton until the finish line.
It's a big group.
Which means Roycer will have to pace anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It doesn't mean you do less work. It doesn't mean you have to do less work. It means you'll basically stop for 30 seconds to a minute, and then you'll have to do the same amount of work anyway, just about.
Yeah.
The other option is, okay, you have a team dynamic where you can't just say to Roycer, get on the front and just pull us full gas. Okay, anticipate with Roycer then.
You should be able to do that.
You should? Like, literally, you have, like, the fastest sprinter in the world. Like, she's so dominant. And she's against Georgie. Like, and then Capecchi can also manage other anticipations in the final.
Exactly.
Like, so you can't lose.
So choice one for me is having Roycer pace. Choice two is maybe attacking with Roycer, like you mentioned. But yep. Roycer hadn't been looking the strongest in the race yet so far.
Yeah. Still, she won this race by about 3 minutes last year.
The choice they do make is having the peloton come back. And from that point onwards, we're talking about 25 to 30 kilometers where it's a peloton group where SD works with Roycer as domestique and Little Trek with Ellen van Dijk and
Van
Aanrooy as domestiques. They try to control any attacks that follow. And I got to give a major shout out to Movistar and FDJ.
Yeah.
For keeping up rolling attacks in the last 25 kilometers. I think it was in the last 15 where they really put it down in the last 10 kilometers with Norsgaard, I think, was the first one. Then Makai attacked 100 times from Movistar. It's probably an exaggeration, but it felt like 100 times. And every single time a domestique from Little Trek or SD Works had to close that down. The fact that those two teams were controlling shows that Lil Trek believes Balsamo might have a chance at beating Wibbous. Yeah. I wasn't so sure about that, but they might prove it true or not by the end of this race. She's won quite a bit already this year, so she's better than the last 2 years, or last year at least. And when it comes to SD Works, they trust that that Wibbous, well, otherwise they wouldn't have made the decision to wait on the peloton anyway. Yeah. They trust that Wibbous can win the sprint anyway. So
still risky though. Like, attack, I agree. If more teams joined Movistar and FDJ, it was Alberto. I was going early as well.
Victoire Alberto?
Yeah.
I don't know, but Jadviel from FDJ as well. She also started attacking, and then it really came down to the last 3 kilometers where those domestiques, Ellen van Dijk, for example, she's gone through a lot already, and Reusser, yeah, in a corner or in a certain place went off-road.
She got put in the bike path.
So she ended up being behind the peloton. So that's another domestique that can't respond to an attack, which means it's a perfect attack for a fellow Australian of yours to make a move, right?
Grace Brown goes, really strong attack, good timing. And this is where I was looking for Daggett. Because like Daggett's not going to... I was looking for Daggett thinking this is the moment. Because Movistar have softened up Trek and SD Works really well. And Grace Brown hits it. And it's a big gap. And you see Van Dijk pulling. And when they start looking, and pulls off, I was like, ooh, she might have it. The only problem for her, Grace Brown, was it was so close to the finish. UAE start pulling. They start doing the lead out for Consonni. So they were quite strong in the finish today. And, you know, they wanted to get a good result. They're not going to get a result. You know, Consonni is actually a good sprinter. So I understand it. But yeah, Grace Brown gets reeled in. There's a lead out then from Pfeiffer Georgie. Kopecky kind of gets in the middle of it. Then Kopecky launches a second time. Wiebes is in the wheel. Wiebes launches. You think this can only go one way. They've done it perfectly, this lead out. And suddenly Balsamo's in the wheel. She's coming out of the wheel, squeezing up the barriers. Bike throw on the line. Very difficult to tell. Benji will say, he says to me, eye test. I said Wiebes. And the eye test never lies. Confirmed. Didn't even see a side on. Don't need side on. Don't need helicopter. Just give me front on at a low angle moving camera. I'll tell you. I've watched, you know how many horse races I watched? How many bobs? Like, bike race, easy.
You've got the eyes for it. I clearly don't. Every single time I'm like, I think Balsamo won. I literally was like, I think it's Balsamo.
Everyone always thinks the quicker rider come from behind wins because their eye remembers them after the line coming up. It's like with Morgado and your man.
But X.
Yeah.
And before the line, well, on the side-on shot, replay of the finish, it looked like Balsamo threw her bike too early and that Wibbous threw her bike at the correct time, which then resulted in the result we have today, which is Lorena Wibbous wins Gent Wevelgem. We said for a very long time. Yeah, it could have been much less close, but hey, I'm not complaining that they made it.
Yeah, it was a great last 25Ks.
So, thanks for the bad tactical decision.
Gotta play devil's advocate.
Okay.
Do you reckon they were thinking it'll be easier for us if we can harness the team help of Little Trek because they'll go for a sprint?
I don't think you can count on that.
Yeah, I agree. But that's just to play devil's advocate. Maybe they're thinking, okay, well, then we'll have other teams help.
If Little Trek also rolled attacks.
Yeah, if ELB attacks.
SD Works ain't winning this race.
If ELB goes with Grace Brown, she wins.
Then Kopecky would have had to counter.
She wouldn't have.
They were
boxed in waiting for the lead out. They weren't going to do it. but yeah, I'll do the Lorena Vivas wins in a photo. Still, Balsamo's in good shape. She won the last 2 races. She won last weekend at Trofeo Alfredo Binder last Sunday, and she won on Wednesday at Buga di Panna. Consonni third. Charlotte de Cool fourth, Confolonieri for UNOX fifth, Sierra sixth, Peterser seventh after being quite strong on the hills, Toledo de Jong eighth, Schweinberger ninth, and Maggie Cole's Lister for Roland 10th.
But.
Shout out to Movistar though. I thought they were really good today.
For the last 4 years, we've been shouting for Lorena Wibbous that she can win Gent Wevelgem. So I think it is actually quite a milestone in not only in her life, but in our lives, because I've been crying about this to happen for so long.
It's not a big milestone in my life.
Mate, I've been dreaming of this day. Maybe not last year, after SD Works, we were winning a lot, but I'm happy for Wibbous that she can scratch that one off, even though, well, the next thing is become even more versatile and try and win RVV, right?
Avi Visa, that's going to be tough. But she...
it is, but it's part of the game.
How many wins does Voss have? 250. That's going to be difficult. But how many wins Cav have? 163. Does Lorena Vibas pass Cav? She's on 76 wins.
How many wins does 76? 150 she can beat. She can pass Voss.
Cav's on one. No, Voss on 250. Oh,
250. she can, she's passed. Only 25. She can.
Pass Voss. Nah, it's
impressive. Yeah, she mate, we're in March and she already has 5 victories.
So from 18, so in the last, she wins like 12, 15 races a year. She and she's 15 years, 15 times 15 is 225.
She needs
to ride till she's like 40 and win the same rate.
I bring breaking news.
Yeah, yeah.
Royster has been disqualified.
Ooh, what for?
I don't fucking know. Luke, producer, suggests that it might be because of the bike bar thing, but I don't think she did that on purpose.
She
accidentally
someone
up
checked
there.
Her on. Yeah, I mean. She didn't exactly procure an advantage. She got dropped and had to chase back on.
How did she get disqualified? It makes no sense.
Are you serious? It could be something else. I don't know. But
Sorry, but if that's the reason why I'm a bit fucked, mate.
That is a joke. Like, I'm sorry, but the amount of guys I see hitting bike paths in every race or hitting the corners, nearly taking people out, and you're going to do that when Royster, at least you're being dropped at the end of the race. When someone, I didn't see how she ended up there. I assume it wasn't a choice. Maybe she's something else. But okay. How do you know she got disqualified?
Luke just told me. In the chat that we can both see.
Maybe though she's trying to come back behind the car. Who knows? Okay, that was Convegelum. I thought the women's race, it wasn't as exciting on the camels, but then the final 30Ks was actually really, really good. Whereas the men's race, we kind of waited the last 30Ks to see the sprint. I thought both races were really quite good. I really enjoyed the women's race. And even though, it's like I said in the other races, even though SD Works win, it was much more of a fight and I thought very entertaining right until the last. So onto Dwars Dorf Lanre for the SD Works train. They have Capecchi and Vibas and Vollering there. So that team is stacked. But Voss comes back. So she's on the... Yeah, she was missing. She won Omloop, so we'll see how Voss goes. Other news, Volta a Catalunya, Pogačar won the final stage. He also won yesterday. He won 4 stages and the GC. He won by 3:41. Landa second and Bernal third. This is Bernal's, on 5 minutes, this is Bernal's best result. It's got to be his best result since he crashed. Off the top of my head, he's looking way better. I know he's racing, he's done 27 race days, but Paranese top 10, 7th. Camino 3rd behind Jonas. Colombia 5th. And now 3rd in Catalunya behind Poggi. Like, that's pretty good. And yesterday he was really, really good in a difficult stage. So I'm really happy to see Bernal like that. But with Poggi, yeah, I don't think anyone's won 4 stages in 1 week for a long time. But he basically got attacked by Stevie Williams on the last Montjuïc. In the circuit, yeah. he responded calmly, clawed him back. Almeida then actually countered really strongly, which was smart from UAE. Decathlon did a really good lead out, but Poggi was just too good in the sprint, and Godon will probably be kicking himself. I think he came second, Guillaume Martin third. I think Williams could have won the stage. I think he just did too much before the sprint. I think he should have focused on picking the right moment. But yeah, anything from Catalunya, Benji? Final thoughts?
Honestly, just Pogačar did what he had to do. He had to destroy the competition at Catalunya. That's what we expected before the race, as written, as they say in Dune. Like, that's what I was expecting, and that delivered. That being said, I was very happy to see Landa be as good as he was. And I was also very happy to see Bernal as good as he was. To see them put in
really,
this race...
That was really nice, yeah.
That's ciclismo. That was ciclismo, and... That makes me think, what would this race have been without Pogačar at the start? We would have seen a battle between Landa and Bernal for a GC victory in a one-week race. Sorry, but I would have paid money to see that.
The reality is, we had Benji 2013 to 2019. The races weren't as good. a lot of the time. This wasn't the best race either, but the reality is without
this
Poggi...
was a fucking boring GC race, man.
Yeah, but without Poggi here, they're just not as aggressive. Poggi forces, he makes everyone show who they are by attacking so early. It'd be more cagey. Maybe that would be good. Of course, it would have been more
maybe,
cagey. Yeah.
You know, don't they have like this discipline on track? Like, isn't it Kieran or something where you've got like a rider or a motorbike before few riders that are sprinting, then the motorbike goes out of the way? Maybe Pogacar is just a racer should hire Pogacar as a...
The tour. Okay. That's what he did. He just pulls full gas, drops everybody.
Racers should hire Pogacar just to be there, but not be included in the results. Just for the sake of opening up the race. But then again, they won't respond because they don't give a fuck if he doesn't send up in the results. My theory doesn't work.
And then eventually, even when he is there and he is counting on GC, they still don't respond because they're like, fuck that. We're already 5 minutes behind. Chris Harper, excellent result. He finishes sixth. That's got to be his best ever GC result. I'm counting this above UAE Tour fourth. So he was excellent after a really good Paris-Nice. Vlasov, solid again. He missed out on the podium because of Bernal's smart move on Isidre yesterday. Enric Mas had cojones. He probably deserved fourth. Yep. But he got cooked in the valley. Lenny solid again. Tiberi very, very good on the actual high mountain stages, but weaker solid yesterday. Tiberi was no good on Volta. He was really good on Portenay. So he was good. I made another top 10. And Visma, just like in the classics this week, they had a shocker. Kuss 13th, completely cracked yesterday. And after he looked like he was coming back because he was fourth or fifth on Portenay. And then Oosterbrooks was like way out of GC and he didn't start today, I don't think. So they didn't have a good race at all.
Giro d'Italia is upcoming. Pogacar's cleaning a race like this. Let's be honest. Isn't this his Giro competition?
No, the Giro competition is better.
Not that much better.
Because the other GC riders, like, they do not carry their peak all year like Vingegaard, Remco, Roggen, and Pogacar. That's also the big difference. Not just the peak level, it's carrying the peak. Yeah, but look at Hindley when he won the Giro. You know where he came, what, 13th in Catalunya?
But Hindley's not there, right?
I know, but I'm saying other GC riders like Simon Yates, like O'Connor, like Thomas. Thomas here training.
I know. Thomas was training. Simon Yates was awful in this race.
Yeah. Like,
but I also, he should still clean them at the Giro.
Yeah. But, yeah, he should.
That's what I'm saying.
No, but he should still clean them, but I think the competition should be better.
Mate, his biggest competition might be... Nah, probably not from his own team. Jay Vine's good, but...
Nah, when Poggi's in the race, there's one boss.
Exactly.
Yeah, but there's the Livigno stage.
Max Poole should be good, but that's also top five material, maybe. Not.
Bernal should do the Giro. I know I've been saying this man needs a break. Fuck it. Send him straight to altitude and send him to the Giro. Because listen, the Tour de France, he's good in the cold. He's good on the long, hard attritional stages. He's a little guy. So like the hustle and bustle in the sprint stages, I don't think is the best for him in the Tour. The Vuelta's super punchy. I think the Giro, and the Giro, as you just said, Benji, like I agree. The Giro depth of GC start list is atrocious. Like compared... Yes, Pogacar's going, but like...
Pogacar wins the Giro by 5 minutes.
Yeah, like if it's less than five, then something's gone wrong, right?
Yeah.
Which, he won the Tour in 21 by 5 minutes.
That sucks, having that feeling going into it. I have zero hype when it comes to Giro GC right now.
Yeah, let me look. Just like, and every time I'm like, oh, let me find a really like high mountain... Tiberi
top five candidate?
I'm like, let me find a stage that's good. And I realized they designed a Vuelta parkour this year. And like these stages, they're not even Giro stages.
Jan isn't looking that good. Like he's looking worse than at Bora.
Yeah, he's terrible here. But like even the Livigno stage, it's a long stage. Who knows? Because the thing is, right? Like, who's gonna have the cojones to two minutes. Say they're 2 minutes behind Pog, best case, unlike in that Lavinia stage. She's going to have the cojones to try and put it into him there.
Nairo Quintana.
He crashed today. He crashed out. And who has the team to do it? So that's my concern.
Reality is that Pogacar will gain a gap on one of the first mountain finishes, and we're going to see a battle for second, third, podium, top five, top 10 for the rest of the Giro. That's how the race will be ridden, and that sucks going into it.
I'll still pick Simon Yates in the preview.
And the thought as well is...
he's not doing the race.
Then people are going to be like, yeah, but Pogacar can crash or he can have bad luck or something.
Yeah, of course.
I don't want to go into that Grand Tour thinking a rider could crash or something, you know? If it's a rider that crashes almost every Grand... like, Roglic at the Tour de France, there's a solid chance that there's something that could go wrong. Pogacar does not have that history. So I don't go into Grand Tours expecting Pogacar to crash. Yes. Sorry, but that one you can't. He has a pattern of almost being barriered every now and then in a stage race, but it never happens.
Crash last two Tours de France.
Yeah.
Not exactly sprint running. He's trying to tackle on the Spandel descent. It's a bit doesn't exactly count. Yeah, listen, I'm looking through the start list and yeah, nothing's jumping out of me, I must say. Danny Martinez and the Bahrain train.
Bernard, unironically, even in...
don't start the class,
even
don't
in classics form...
you're a fucking Belgian Bernard media would... plant.
Even in GC, even in classics form, he would top 10 the Giro.
We do one if interview he goes with all the out standard. And you're like, how about... top 10? Yeah, of course, you know. But I'm not sure...
in GC form, he top 5 the Giro.
Nah, you're underrating. You're underrating people like Tiberi and Caruso and Martinez.
I have those riders. Martinez will have a bad day.
Probably. Anyway, on that positive note,
we just roasted the Giro.
I just look. Simon Yates isn't even going, so I'm all in. I'm all in on Bock, and I'm friends with Ben.
Eddie Dunbar, my friend.
I'm just going all in on Ben O'Connor. That's the only option. Is Plap doing the Giro?
He's on the star list, and it would logically fit with the Olympics.
I'll just go full Australian bias then. Go for it.
Van Seven on the WinGC. Alaphilippe's on the provisional start list.
Well, just Van Seven. He's a bit of a selfish rider, I think. I think so. And Cavagna.
It's hard for me to say that.
Did I roast Cavagna?
I feel that vibe. Yeah, you roasted Cavagna a few times.
I'll go again. I know no one's listening anymore. This is In Place, the weekly show. If I was Lazcano, I rewatched E3 because obviously it didn't exactly go well for Visma, so yeah. I rewatched it. I rewatched E3. If I was Lazcano, or if I was team management, he ain't riding the rest of these classics. Disgrace. Because he wasn't cooked. You have Lazcano in the group. Ivo Oliveira has waited to pull Pollitt across before Paterberg. You have Lazcano in the group who looked stronger than everybody except Van der Poel and Van Aert. And Cavagna not only didn't pull, and he wasn't cooked dropping off the back, because he's coming through third wheel, Pollitt and Jorgensen would pull, and he would skip and actually disrupt the group. Not even just sitting at the back because he's cooked. Then when Jorg accelerates, he has the legs to initially go with Jorg on the wheel. So he's not completely bonked or anything. I couldn't believe what I was watching. If I was Lazcano, I would be furious. Because if he pulls absolutely full gas from when Lazcano gets across to him, maybe Lazcano gets over the Paterberg, and who knows? Who knows what happens? Maybe he gets second. So if I was Movistar, I wouldn't have been happy with that. But I just had to get that off because viva Lazcano. Like Lazcano, can we say now that Lazcano is not a one-hit wonder? He's like a genuine elite classics rider.
He was never a one-hit wonder.
Nah, Dwars Duo, come on. After Dwars Duo, I didn't think this guy's going to be that good in every race.
Well, I was expecting him to be like a classics guy. Like,
I thought he was a breakaway merchant.
I already rated
merchant,
him more than Garcia Cortina after that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but...
but like, with Bettiol winning RV, I immediately thought one-hit wonder. With Lascano, I didn't have that feeling after Wazor. I was like, oh, we've got a new guy on the block.
Yeah, he's young. But yeah, I didn't think he'd be this good. So he's really, really good. So yeah, Viva Lascano. Maybe he wins Tour of Flanders. Who knows? That's all from us. We're not doing a weekly show because, yeah, I'm feeling a bit crook and I've got to travel next week. And we have our film dropping mid next week, which we've got to continue the edit with as well. So that's taking up a lot of our time, but it'll be worth it in the end. Thanks to Join for sponsoring the episode. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll see you with the Tour of Flanders preview in the middle of the week. Until then, ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.